committee to consider, in addition to calling Advocate Terry Matau and possibly the regulator and whoever else you have in mind, that it's imperative that we have the Hawks and...
No, look at the media statement. Have you got it?
No, I don't, but I'll look for it.
Alan, where is the media statement? Sorry? There's no, you didn't... Oh,
it's fine.
It's there. Yeah, it's there.
But, I mean, then we had...
No,
we're
here.
Yeah. That's fine. Then on the PIC, I think that we should try to... that we should fit in the PIC during this term. I think it's imperative, given...
They're on the agenda, but it's there for the bills. But anyway... All right, fine. What do members feel? You've heard Mr. Mania. What do members feel? What do we do about the PIC? So we have no position on it.
No, my hand is up.
Oh, sorry. No, you're the co-chair. You don't need a hand up. You just speak.
Chair, I think we should remember the principle that we've established about how we're going to rotate these SOEs that appear before us. So we shouldn't... There should be a valid reason when we change our position on that. And I also want to remind ourselves that even the provisional, I call it provisional program because it's the whippery of political parties that decides the program of parliament. We're not even sure whether we'll go up to the end of November. They can decide tomorrow that constituency work starts earlier. It means to overhaul the whole program. So the last time I checked, we've got PIC bills, which to me are a priority. Because Parliament has instructed us to finish all the bills before we rise for the fourth term. Now, I want to make a suggestion that as to what issues are going to appear on the program, we leave it to your discretion. Chair, I'm talking to you.
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah,
we're leaving it to your discretion, to use your discretion as to what are the issues that are priority based on what we've already discussed, so that we don't fudge in new issues as and when we feel like doing that. So I don't want us to sit here and come and discuss which issue must be there and which one must not be there when a principle has been set. So first thing first, it's those that are supposed to be rotated, which are put on the agenda, and it's the bill, and anything else will come later.
Chair, I was going to support what Comrade Tandy is saying, that let us stick on what was agreed upon initially with regards to what Mr. Honorable Maynard is raising. Let us stick to what was agreed upon initially.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Clearly, we make arrangements and then we try to stick to them. There's no question about that. So that there's no debate about that. But the question really is the position that the PIC finds itself in. It's not simply a question of looking at its annual report. There are very good reasons why that should be done in terms of the investigations which are now taking place. The accusations made in the BBS report and the unlisted investment portfolio, the exposure of that to the state corruption issues. So there are very real reasons why we should deal with it now rather than later. So I would urge us to find a gap to put it in, notwithstanding a process agreement that we have, and we're not trying to renege on that, but we certainly believe that there's very good reason to deal with the PIC on an urgent basis.
Chair, I think Alpha set out the arguments. We can hardly ignore, or we can hardly not have a hearing on the PIC, given what we know is going on there in respect to condition management and questionable investments. We can't turn a blind eye to it.
We're going in circles. I don't think we should be preemptive in our discussions. It seems as if there are people who are suggesting that that is saying the PAC is not important enough and should not be put in the agenda, and that's not what the ANC is saying. The ANC is saying, use your discretion on what item should come first in the program. And we're already hearing words like hearing. I don't know, because you see here we're in Parliament, there's parlance that should be consistent.
I think you mean speaking.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying, you must say briefing. So we're in Parliament, we're not in the streets. So once you say hearing, you mean something else. So the parlance must also be correct so that we're in sync with the work that you're doing. So the briefing, you will use your discretion at what point and conjuncture it will come. In terms of the principle of the work we do, I don't think we differ.
Colo is right. I think you agree.
In the house, I told you.
Is what he's telling. I think he agrees. Okay, can I suggest this? Right, one is only yesterday the issue arose: is when is this commission of inquiry into governance and overall management of the PIC should take place? All parties in the committee, I think, certainly the DA and the ANC, agree that such a concerted, comprehensive inquiry by independent people. Otherwise, it becomes susceptible to like a political football. Yeah, it's election time. Mr. Mania, you are acting like a typical opposition member, and we're acting like a typical ruling party. People are going to use this issue. The opposition, understandably, and members of the ANC, we should speak to our comrades in Nelson Mandela Bay. Well, we're running the show now, whatsoever. What I mean is speak to people in Joburg. You know. If you're in opposition, we'll also want to do similar things as Mr. Mania wants to do. And Mr. Mania, I can't say God forbid, whatever forbid, you should ever become, ancestors forbid, you should ever become a ruling party anywhere significant. Cape Town is not significant, right? Joburg is not significant.
We take Helen Zille first.
Hey, but you guys are bad on immigration. Let's not discuss that. I mean, listening to your guy. Hey. You only use the thing in a populist way. I thought there was another part. But in any case, look.
They took money from the Gupta.
Let's come back to this. So there's an inquiry. Let's find out where that is. Secondly, we are discussing the unlisted issues. That is inevitable, inexhaustible. Yeah. What? This what? Oops. What part of me?
This part.
Oh, right. Look. Let's do this, right? Let's be realistic. Look, guys. I mean the plural sense before Tandy chops my head off. Look, basically what I'm saying is, I don't think there's a difference between us. That the PIC is extremely challenged, right? For our own reasons, because we're governing, just think about it, right? And we have to, whether we like it or not, as is happening, by the way, there's a very impressive thing I saw on the TV today. The president has asked the SIU to report on what has been the consequences of their report since 2002 for civil servants, where you extract the money, but are they still working in the civil service? So you can see the present administration is serious for a variety of reasons, not least we are concerned about our electoral base. So on the PIC, yesterday I saw, by the way, comrades, Carol Payton writing yet another piece. But this morning I got a News 24 clipping that says Daniel Machil has been cleared. Oh, it is a report. I saw it on News Online. I haven't read it. I just saw the headline. There's something about a report's going to be released. I think it's Jeff Budlander report that exonerates and acquits Daniel Machil over allegations that he asked somebody to give his partner, alleged partner, some money, right? But then there are also claims that in VBS Mutual, as Mr. Lee says, that 5 million rounds was sent. All of these things should be examined. Sandy? Yes. No one's disputing that. The problem that some of us have is that we become overly politicized here. The opposition parties want to show, largely, understandably, that the PIC is in a mess, that poor Mondlane, who just got there a few months ago, is responsible, the ANC is not worth it, and we will get defensive. It's not a right atmosphere. So what I'm saying is, why don't we negotiate? Tandy, myself, will negotiate with the DA about how we manage it. So we agree there should be some sort of focus on the PIC. I would suggest on the 14th of November, we look into a compromise on what you want and what we want. Why don't you four of us talk offline? I don't want to be left to a discretion of a chair. I think Tandy doesn't mean literally that, right? So the four of us will discuss it. I don't think there's any differences. And maybe offline we can share some sensitivities also, provided it doesn't end up in the media. So what we are saying is we're agreed. And I want to say something else also.
Can David give us his word?
What word?
On anything we discuss in good faith.
Yeah, we will discuss it offline. So we will share things. I don't think there's a difference, right? On the matter of the PIC, well, invariably, on unlisted, that's an issue. You're insisting that all unlisted be declared. Yeah. Jonas had agreed to it. Now, the PIC is saying, yeah, but there are certain conditions to be attached. Now, we are sympathetic as the ANC, as I understand it, Tandy, to the PIC view. What we need to do is talk also offline about why we feel the way we do and what we think are the consequences of a complete unlisting, and we've discussed that, right? And we're looking at other parallels. Our researchers are going to look at the South American case that was raised and so on. So I don't think there's a difference on the importance of the issue. Shall we leave it at that, Tandy? Okay. Then can we just issue the statement, man, because there's something else that's emerged. The ANC this morning, I'll come to that later. Let's just go to the statement. There's nothing here that's controversial, right? It's consistent with decisions we've taken before. So it reads very briefly, at its meeting this morning, our committee welcomed the release of the report. And then we say the committee expressed its outrage at the plunder of VBS Mutual and urged the Hawks and the NPA to act swiftly and decisively, without interfering in the internal investigations, and consistent with our oversight role, I'll confer with our chairpersons from, Justice and Police. We will call on the Hawks and NPA to report on progress in this regard. The committee is caught up. You see, the media is asking, how come you guys are so quiet? So we want to explain to them, and when I said to somebody yesterday, we're negotiating around the 7th, they said, why so late? And the chief whip asked me this morning, rightly, what is your committee doing? So I explained, he said, no, you're right. So that's why we say we caught up with the budget report recommendations and tax bills this week, MTBPS in the 2 weeks after that, but we will meet with VBS on 7 November. Mr. Kubian Naidu has agreed to come. I also spoke to IRBA. They said they will come. We need to add there, the meeting will include, Treasury, Financial Sector Conduct Authority, SARB, Hawks, NPA. We should add South African Institute of Chartered Accountants because they have the power to take away your status as a chartered accountant. And once again, we know KPMG is accused of wrongdoing, right? Once again. And we urge IRBA to complete his investigations. Now, Mr. Bernard Agalis is rightly very cautious, right? I said to him, when are you going to finish? He said, no, we started the, Tandy, they started, I think he would have told you last week, Dick Lady, he started the investigation when the issue first emerged in the public domain. But he says that the forensic report is now assisting them to expedite it, right? He said he'll come back to me by next week to give a broad date. I said, we won't hold him by that. Then the collapse of the VBS is a major setback for diversity and transformation in the financial sector. Until we are convinced otherwise, our view remains that every attempt should be made to rescue VBS under a new effective leadership. We also express our concern that innocent employees at VBS Mutual, not accused of being part of the plunder, have lost their jobs and request other banks to prioritize them to fill in the vacancies they have. I know this is pushing it. We just say request. We need to learn the lessons from the collapse of VBS Mutual to reduce the prospects of this happening in other financial institutions in future. Consideration needs to be given to an inquiry into whether SARB, National Treasury, the Department of Cooperative Governance, the South African Local Government Association, and other relevant organs of state could have acted sooner on VBS and reduced the extent of its failures. I don't like that. I don't know if somebody can think of a better way of wording reduced extent. With the implementation of the Financial Sector Regulation Act from 1st April, the new Prudential Authority has greater powers to subpoena witnesses and access information to investigate allegations of wrongdoing by financial institutions. I'm told, by the way, the committee should know this, the power that we have given is substantially more than the power that was there before. Moreover, it was scattered in a variety of legislation and not so explicit. But they were able to act swiftly, Comrade Tandi. They were able to subpoena cell phone. That's how you've seen in the media, and I think it's in the report, actual cell phone screenshots and so on. They've got scores and scores of screenshots. Is that right, Younger? Younger's asleep for now. She only thinks about tax. All right, fine. I'll teach you, Younger. So what has happened now? So what has happened is somebody said to me that, I should be cautious of my words, if you challenge in a court of law, then they are free to release those things. So people who think, am I right, this is the new era, right? That actually, if you challenge it, then the Reserve Bank has the right to release those things. So if you have done something wrong, it's probably prudent for you not to go to court. But if you haven't done something wrong, then you must go to court because there's nothing they have against you. Okay, these data powers serve in the interest of depositors and policyholders, and usually it is the low-income depositors and policyholders who disproportionately lose out the most when financial institutions collapse. The reason for saying this, Comrade, is that people have to be aware now, with the new dispensation, post-2008 global crisis, what happened to VBS Mutual is going to happen to Nedbank, or Capitec, or Standard Bank, or whoever. They are much more powerful now. This Parliament should be proud, and so should the National Treasury, for what we've done. And look how it worked. It's the first test of the new prudential authority. And the conduct authority also now has got far more powers. So I'm saying, colleagues, there's nothing here that's controversial. Right? It just alerts the public. All I'm going to do is try it in SAICA. Okay, then having done that, it's the second session now, which Tandi will chair. I'll also sort of come in. Tandi will manage the meeting. And as I understand it, on the 2nd of October, Mr. Lees, you were there too, right?
Yes.
We want to thank on behalf of the committee the work that Tandi, Mr. Lees, and whoever, Antonia, and I think Teboho was there. Thank all of them. By all accounts, it went very well. On the same day, I was at the Illicit Financial Flows conference, which I asked them to report on. It's horrendous, Tandi, what's going on every day. It was the NGO that convened it called AIPC. And I suggested I'll put it to the committee that in late January, Alan Teboho, please note, we will invite them to give us an overview of the 2 days, the international experts there and so on. But it was very riveting, actually, what's coming out. And things are worse, Tandi, than even we know about the flows outside South Africa of our money. So in short, there we are. Thank you, Tandi. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Jefferson. Also, I need to thank you for throwing me in the deep end.
Thank you.
To be an observer in a match, in a boxing match between National Treasury and stakeholders. and you should have seen me how I tried to separate them. And Momo was also not assisting me by showing up and making it very difficult. But I can assure you, by the end of the meeting, there were smiles from both sides. And I thank you very much, and thank you, young guy Chris, and the entire team, and all of you guys for having managed to keep your cool in a very difficult discussion. VAT is not a very easy discussion, I can assure you, members. And I'm going to remind you that the issues that you gave us to go and look at were 5 issues, younger, that were reduced to 4. It was the issue of the VCC, the doubtful debt, the collective investment schemes, and so on, that we had to reach an agreement. And fortunately, we agreed on certain matters, which Yanga is going to give you a report on those that we agreed. One major issue that was still a bone of contention was on the doubtful debt. We said a narrative should be prepared that can be discussed and see whether people could agree. But at that stage, remember, the matter was before cabinet. It was serving before cabinet for cabinet to take a decision. And on that specific day, cabinet was sitting and Momo was representing National Treasury at cabinet level. And I think Yanga will take us into confidence as to how far those issues were agreed upon. And Chair, to brief you, it was interesting that what some of the line that needed to be changed was actually proposed by the taxpayers themselves in a form of, it was not JSC, it was PwC, yes, and it seemed to have been acceptable from is she Vanessa or Patricia? So hopefully, honourable member, we'll take you later. Are you raising it, Comrade Nat?
No.
Oh, okay. So Yanga will take us through, Chair. The report is there. There's a copy of the report. The only thing that I must report also was that stakeholders was concerned at the timeline given to attend the meeting. And we promised to explain to them in this meeting how communication went through, but the Secretariat is still not ready to show us the emails that were sent. That's why the VAT panel was not part of the meeting, because it was short notice for them. But because there were no new issues that were raised that needed them to be there, so it did not do us any harm in our discussions, as we were only focusing on these four issues, which at the end only one has to be attended to. So, Chair, with those few remarks, let me give Yanga and the team to respond, and then we'll go to the second session of the meeting that took place in the afternoon.
I have spoken to Momo and requested that, because it's an executive structure, that the panel be invited to attend. Am I right, Tibo? We gave you no invitation to send to the panel, right? So to be fair to the Secretary of Parliament side, they didn't.
I didn't send to
them. Anyway, and they acknowledged it. It was actually bad if they were not there, because they had to respond to some questions. What Momo said to me was, once they do the report, they're not answerable. I said, yes, but this is what the committee wants, and they were at the previous meeting. So actually that is quite concerning, but we will deal with that offline. What happened there? It's Momo's fault. He's not here. I don't want to stress him out, but next week I will phone him and explain to him it was wrong. And if need be, we will call the panel back, actually. That's the decision that Tandi will make in consultation with the committee. The second issue is, it's merely a request, Comrade Chair. From what I heard on the non-VAT issues, right, Comrade Chair, there's substantial agreement except for the one issue. So would it not help, Yanga, for us to deal with that finished? Then the only challenging issue is VAT. Then we spend the rest of the meeting on VAT. So we settle the issues that we've already settled. In other words, we're voting on a bill already in policy terms. So we deal with the non-VAT issues. And then there's another thing, Comrade Chair, I must be fair to you. I don't know whether during the constituency period in all the rush, whether I emailed you a two-pager I got from Ravi Naidu. You know, he used to work for Naledi. I did. Now, Ravi is a former, Nati will know him, COSATU researcher. He has assisted government in a lot of drafting of rules and regulations. I think he's asset managing or advising asset managers now. And he contacted me, and I told him that Tandi is chairing it the day before you had a meeting. And I said, coincidentally, the meeting tomorrow, but I don't want to lumber the acting as the chairperson of the subcommittee with the issue. I'll raise it when we come back. I forgot whether I gave it to her. That's the one issue you have to raise in fairness, because we allow big business to come here on the day we're voting on the bill, and they've had a say in changing the clauses. So it's only fair that we allow somebody like Ravi to have a say. So I think we did email it. That's the only thing to report, and I'm done. Thank you.
I think we still need to give him an opportunity to make a presentation and consider his views.
Okay.
It's never too late to look at substantive engagement. Yanga, it's okay.
One practical question. Is somebody here, a guy called...
Start with that, and then follow
with people in one practical...
When I change...
No, so I thought, just keep me not Sandy, right? Ravi said they will send somebody here if they could. Is there somebody here from... Oh, there he is, here.
Yeah.
So he's Gurav, is it?
That's right.
Oh, he's right there, sorry. Yeah, then he can speak, yeah. Okay.
So, yeah,
Nati. You should go first before we take the report from Yang.
This is working, okay. So, I think that the My relationship to Ravi is that we work for a company called Jaltech, and we do the administration for his fund. And his fund is really focused on enterprise and supply development using the VCC regime. And really, the Treasury has laid out, Treasury has laid out a few problems with the way that they've seen the VCC legislation being used. And there's an attempt to stamp out abuse, which we totally support. But I think one of the issues is that some of the other things raised by Treasury was a low rate of deployment, and also specifically the demographic creation of jobs. And really, the aims, some of the mechanisms put in place to curb the abuse is not allowing a single shareholder to have more than 20% of one share class. So really what this does is it actually stops companies from making use of VCCs for enterprise and supply development. The reason being that these companies, when they provide funding, they often provide funding to companies in their supply chain or in their sector. And they don't want to share that exposure with anyone else. So if it's a telecommunications provider, they don't want their competitors to also have that exposure, to also have the reporting of that investor. And they also support the underlying investments with other support, not just financial, by plugging them into their customer database, for example. So they don't want to share that benefit. And the way that the legislation is proposed to be changed, this will put a total stop to that. Ravi himself has told me that if the legislation goes through, that he'll need to cancel his fund. And in this interim period, ever since the amendments were proposed, I've gone with him to meet some of his clients, and his clients are very much on the side of, we will invest if the legislation does not get amended in this way. My concern really is threefold. One is that these funds that have ring-fence structures that allow one investor to get exposure to one investment, they are in fact the funds that deploy money the fastest. So in as much as Treasury is concerned about a low deployment rate, I would say that by disallowing this, the deployment rate will get slower, potentially. The second thing is also these funds, the investments are often very diverse demographically. You find that the funds that don't make use of these ring-fence structures, they are pooled structures. Those funds tend to be quite low risk. They tend to be property-backed, and they tend to be creating jobs just in the urban areas, just in the major urban areas. And you can understand that retail investors are afraid of investing in VCCs, and so they all are herded towards these very low-risk structures. So really, I think it will reduce the diversity of the venture capital ecosystem drastically. My third point is really around the policy objectives. I understand that the policy objective, specifically the primary policy objective, is increasing access to equity finance for SMEs. I understand that in the original explanatory memorandums that there was references to the structures being pooled. But I don't see that as a primary policy objective. I see that this is not a savings mechanism. This is specifically a way to get access to equity finance. And my sense is that, again, if you look at the biggest funds that use pooled structures, they're actually not providing equity finance to SMEs. They're just structured in that way, but they're providing what is an analog to debt finance to large institutions or large companies that could have probably got debt finance. So my sense is that by allowing this amendment to go through as is, we're really going to actually not achieve the primary policy objective or reduce it drastically. And ironically, a lot of the smaller VCCs are the ones that will go out of business. So it's quite ironic that this is legislation to help SMEs, and these VCCs that are SMEs in their own right are going to go out of business because they make use of these targeted approaches. Thank you.
Well, there are two things to it. It's either you misconstrued the objects of the bill, and also because you were not part of the process, you might have missed out on changes and discussions. But I think it's good that I took you first, because then Yanga will explain exactly how we dealt with these discussions on the VCCs and the impact moving forward, including the date, the effective date, and what's going to happen to the class of shares. and how we characterize the problem and how we believe there will be a solution to allow those with good intentions to continue to participate. So you have missed out a bit in that, but you were misconstruing the object of the bill and its intentions from the onset. But Yanga will give an explanation.
May I respond? I was part of the consultations, and Yanga has been very engaging in the consultation.
Not towards the end. You were not even in the last meeting.
I didn't come to Parliament. Sorry, I came to the consultations with Treasury.
No, Chair. Listen to what I'm saying to you. There's a lot of changes we made to that discussion, and you were not part of that engagement, including here and even at National Treasury. That's why I'm saying it's good I took you first, because she's going to explain exactly how we dealt with those concerns that you raised today. Listen to her response. If there's clarity, maybe if there's a grey area, we can take it. So let's give her an opportunity to present. She will take into consideration what you just said.
Thank you, Chair. On the 14th of September, there was a meeting with Treasury and stakeholders. In that meeting, they were both representatives of the VCC, of the pooled approach, as well as the targeted approach. And then on the 2nd of October, we had a meeting as well, of which VCC members were there. I just want to say that when the VCC policy was formed in 2011, it was meant for a pooled approach, not a targeted approach. It was never meant for a single corporate to say that if I want maybe a conveyancer belt, I'll supply that SMME with money so that he can supply the conveyancer belt only to me, meaning that that corporate was going to do that in the line of business anyway. And if you are doing it in the line of business, you get a Section 11A tax deduction. It is in the business. You cannot get a capital allowance like an upfront deduction of the whole amount. So that was the view why we never went on the targeted approach. And then what happened is that we said to them that if you think that the targeted approach is working, in 2021 there's going to be a review of the VCC. Bring us all the comments so that we can check, because the policy rationale was the pooled approach. But that said, we said that if now there are structures whereby you've issued shares before 24 October 2018, we allow you to grandfather you in that structure. But now the new
to capture that point, because
yes,
the effective date. That
yes, the new classes of shares will apply only to shares that are issued after 24 October 2018. That's what we are proposing. So if you've already entered into a structure whereby you think that the target, there is a loophole to apply for a targeted approach in our tax legislation, you are okay. We're not going to penalize you on the shares issued before 24 October 2018. But moving forward, on any shares issued after 24 October 2018, then the test for the class of shares will apply from that date. That is what we are proposing. So that is how we said we're going to solve the problem. We're not going to say if you've already entered into a structure before that date, before 24 October, you've already issued the shares, you're not going to be penalized. The test will apply on shares issued after 24 October 2018. And we think that we are solving the problem of saying you've already entered into a structure. But if now you want us to continue with the targeted approach, we can't at this stage. Give us all the submissions, and then when we do the review in 2021, we can look at the submissions, because the policy rationale for VCC was the pooled approach. That is the answer on that issue.
I'm going to allow you to engage.
Thank you. So I think that the whole VCC community, they appreciate that the effective date is not retrospective. I think that specifically, though, I think that the one amendment which we're very comfortable with, because we believe it supports enterprise and supply development in its true spirit as well, is the SMEs need to have 50% of their revenue come from others. So in the conveyancing belt example, if a company just gives an SME money for a conveyancing belt, they just sell back to that company, then that would fall foul of the 50% rule, that the company needs to get more than 50% of its revenue from people who are not investors. And there's a three-year period that allows that company to then do achieve that, because initially, if it's in the supply chain of a corporate, most of its business could come from that corporate, but over 3 years it needs to get at least 50% of its business outside of that. So I agree. I think that where there are companies that may have engaged in the past in this kind of a structure where they just got an extra tax deduction for putting you through a VCC and abusing the legislation, that that needs to come to a stop. But I believe it's adequately addressed with the fact that the revenue of the underlying company needs to be more than 50% from other people who don't have an interest in it. So you're creating a true SME. I think that one of the side effects of not allowing a corporate, or not allowing corporates to have this targeted approach, is that what you're seeing is that these are the investments that are higher risk because a corporate can support it if it's parallel to its industry and more demographically spread.
Let me do this intervention.
Yeah.
You see, she explained from the beginning that the policy perspective was to have a pooled approach.
Yeah.
It was not a targeted approach. And she's explained that if there's a view that there should be a targeted approach, submissions must be made because the review will be made in 2021. And she explained why they had to look at it this way because of how people abused the VCC.
Mm-hmm.
Now, though that submission of the 50% must be a submission that goes to the review process. It's not a process that can be dealt with in the current conjuncture because there has been evidence of abuse. To a certain extent. That's not an argument that we can restart and discuss now, because the VCCs themselves, some of them did acknowledge that indeed others have been doing that. And those who are pleading their case are those who are not doing that. Now, I think we have come to a point where we said, yes, the review 2021 should be considered. And remember, they said this is going to only apply to those whose date will be from the 24th of October 2018. Those who started earlier are not going to be affected. So I think we should not panic in terms of process and how it's going to unfold. Sometimes we speak against, I don't know how to say, yeah, past each other, and we don't understand what we're trying to do. So your concerns are going to go into a substantive submission that we need to consider, and it must come, and then it will build the case towards why it should be a targeted approach.
May I clarify? So I think the 50% provision is not one we're proposing. It's something that is already proposed, and we're saying that that is actually sufficient. And the second thing is the 24th of October date, that also applies to for example, Ravi's fund. To clients who have started funds, and after the 24th of October, they can no longer carry on their business model. And so if, and the way the VCC legislation works, something we raised on the 14th of September in the engagement, the way the VCC legislation works is that there are many other criteria you need to satisfy which take time, such as you can't have a single investor that has more than 20% of the entire fund.
So if you can
no longer carry on your business model.
No, it's not like that. You see, Yanga, you're supposed to have a one-to-one meeting here. You're speaking past each other here.
He did phone me on Monday. And I told him that this is on shares issued after 20th October, but if you are failing another test, it's not based on this legislation. It's not based on these proposals. Now you are failing another connected person test because you have to find other. It's not based on these proposals. And I said to him, the issue is that you want to continue with the targeted approach.
No, we'll have a meeting. We'll have a meeting. Will be part chair. Unfortunately, I'm going to drag you into that meeting. No. You see, that's what they were doing to me even that day. This is what I deal with, and so on. We're going to have a meeting. Yeah, we're going to have a discussion. There's a better way of dealing with it outside this environment. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
So don't worry. We'll have a meeting.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yes. Yanga, please continue.
Thank you, Chair. And the second issue that we have to deal with is the clarification of the tax treatment of doubtful debts. In the bill that was published for comments in July, we requested that you move from a discretion and then the percentage for that should be allowed is should be 25%. On the response document, we said 25 and 40, but the main issue was the 85%, and the issue was that banks are getting the 85%, but our view was that we want to allow banks a differentiation because banks are regulated in terms of the Reserve Bank Act, and secondly, the 85% is based on Regulation 67 of the Reserve Bank. During that meeting from the floor, there was a proposal from the stakeholders to say that those taxpayers who are not banks, who want to get 85%, should get the 85% by means of an application for a ruling from SARS. We agreed to the proposal. It came from the taxpayers from the floor. And then we said we're going to set a criteria, we're going to propose a criteria for those taxpayers to apply a ruling for SARS so as to get the 85%. And we are proposing the criteria, and we agreed to the fact that for you to get an 85%, you must make an application for a ruling from SARS. And that is our proposal.
Today I don't see people who were there in the meeting when we were discussing the issue of the 85, and I hope it's not going to pull us back,
yeah.
Especially Patricia. When Patricia is not here,
yeah.
I'll take it that she's very happy where she is.
Yeah.
Did you make her happy? You need to promise me that you made her happy. Yeah.
She agreed because she sent us an email and said she's looking forward to the proposed changes.
But why do you get involved? She's happy. Do you want to say something? Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The critical thing here really is the criteria, and that's I think being laid out on your slide there. Is it? I wonder if you could just take, Madam Chair, through you, if you could just take us through the criteria.
Remember, you see, he's getting older. I'm worried because he was in the meeting when we said we have moved from 25 and considered 40, and now he has forgotten all about it. Take him again.
Thank you, Chair. There was a view that if it's going to be a ruling, you must set out the criteria. So the proposed criteria is not only based on IFRS, because that was the view. The proposed criteria is based whether you are using IFRS or not IFRS. So anyone who is a non-bank lender who wants to apply to SARS for a ruling, whether you are a small business not using IFRS, whether you use IFRS, the criteria is the same. And the first in the criteria is the history of the debt owed to that taxpayer, including the number of repayments not met and the duration of the debt. That is, when you apply to SARS, SARS must know what is the history of the debt, how many repayments that have not been met. And the steps taken by the taxpayer to enforce the repayment of the debt, the likelihood of the debt being recovered, that is important, and security available in respect of that debt, the criteria applied by the taxpayer in classifying the debt as debt, as well as any other consideration that SARS may deem relevant. So when you make, SARS will give you this based on this, but they will look at these issues. The nice thing about other considerations, meaning that there may be other things, maybe the taxpayer may pass maybe three, and then SARS can have a look based on the taxpayer's circumstances, what other considerations SARS may think fit based on the taxpayer's circumstances.
Is there anybody representing Anika here? Because, I find Anika a little bit reasonable when she engages. So if she's not here, is nobody representing Anika? No?
They're all happy.
Yeah, they.
You had done your chairs, what happened?
Everybody's happy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay, so these criteria are not really in any way defined. So it's up to the discretion of SARS. And so the question then comes is who in SARS is going to make these decisions? Is it the Commissioner? I mean, and France, you need to help me perhaps here, or is it a junior clerk? What is the level of seniority that's going to make these decisions? Because we've had this discussion in the past, and I know France has clarified it for me where there's something to clarify. Yeah, I don't see anything that can be clarified. There's nothing said about who's going to make these decisions. SARS is a big organization.
You see, Elf believe that Yanga is not good enough to explain and France can do that better. It's interesting.
fair, immaterial to me. You put words in my mouth, put political words, but not personal.
Yeah, you mentioned the name.
Because there's no way that I had said anything like that.
Yeah, you mentioned the specific name. That's fine. Maybe you could clarify.
And similar issues in the past about how SARS were dealing.
That's fine. To me, immaterial. I hear all of them anyway.
I think the questions that are asked about SARS is administration. Which office at SARS is going to do it? Is it the senior SARS official, maybe in terms of the Tax Administration Act? Unfortunately, I'm doing tax policy. I cannot answer SARS administration issues. And if SARS is present, they are better suited to answer the question.
I prefer all of you when we are here, you see, because I'm able to defeat ELF even if the house is full, if I believe in a view, because I can explain it. You see, this one I'm very clear. So when I'm clear, you don't mess with me. So France, explain to me. France is the hardest one, actually, if you compare all of them. When he believes in a policy position, he stands very firm. So don't prefer that one. You must prefer the softer one.
Well, thank you, Chair. I'll take that as a compliment that I'm a principled person. So this is a directive. And the current thinking, it hasn't been fully firmed up yet, but the current thinking is this will be run out of head office. Now, that does create something of an issue for us, because potentially we have 11,000 people who may want to knock on our doors for one of these. Hopefully not, but the potential is there. The reason we don't have terminology like senior SARS official here is because that's unique to the Tax Administration Act. It's not a concept that exists in any other tax act. It was purely in that context that we stratified the layers of authority. But as I said, the current thinking is this would be run out of a head office level, and so you're probably not going to be seeing junior people doing this. Again, because this is a directive, it has a long-lasting impact. So this isn't something that you do on an annual basis. This is something that you would do at a periodic basis. So again, like our advanced tax rulings, there's an additional layer of, let's call it review here, because it's not a once-off decision, it's a decision with a future impact.
You raise a fundamental issue which is important, where you explain a directive. Sometimes you explain directives in what do you call that? The things that you, which is not legislation, that are done by the executive. What do you call them? No, there's a terminology they use in government. Regulation. Now, to allay his fears, maybe there should be a line that says a directive will be issued. I don't know, Elf, does it cover your concern? A directive will be issued that will address this matter. So I don't know how are we going to capture it, because we should also be careful not to make changes to how the legislation is crafted, because then it takes us back, and it's them who's going to give us trouble when we do that. You know how they do it. So be careful. As we consider their views, they didn't take us on procedure. So let's find something. No, David does it all the time. We'll agree here, and then when it makes the changes in the legislation, then David says,
Yes.
But we want to cover it succinctly so that it covers the concern.
Thank you, Chair. In our bill, we are saying that it is proposed that on application by a taxpayer, SARS may issue a directive with consent.
Please.
Chair, I mean, directive has a particular context in the tax legislation. So, I mean, initially people were talking about a ruling. But a ruling is something you generally pay for. And it doesn't consider factual issues. Considers legal questions. This is much more factually intense, so it doesn't fit comfortably under that heading. So we looked around, and you have a similar concept in the employees' tax space, where you can get a directive on what kind of tax rate should be applied to a particular situation, and it seemed to fit conceptually better into that kind of context, and that's why we're calling it a directive.
Well, there's material evidence to it that you're dealing with.
I mean, this is a factual question. So you're going to have to bring, that's what these criteria are talking to. You need to bring us a set of facts so that we can understand why it is that you deserve more than 40%. And if those facts point in that direction, fine. If they don't, well, then they don't.
We won't pull it for
Chair,
long.
Thank you for the discussion, and it's great. And from my point of view, I need to satisfy myself. I don't really rely entirely on people like Erica and others to be happy in order for me to be happy.
He's starting a fight. That's fine. That one is between me and him. Let's leave it. I know that you see, if the other ones, you know, Anika applies this mind legally, else when you don't. You see, you are a typical test practitioner. She applies, I've listened to her arguments very carefully. So that's why I said if she's happy, yeah, you're one of her members. You see, if she's happy, then all of you need to be happy. Yeah, you need to, because she does it differently. So, so thank you very much. We did very well on this discussion. Let's proceed to the next issue. Are you aware that you are going to vet issues now? I guess. Chris? Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I think during the meeting on the 2nd of October, there were too many issues regarding the process. So I think it's only fair to say what is the tax process. What happened is that we published the rates bill during budget, and then a VET panel was appointed by the minister. And the panel submitted the report on the 6th of August. And then what happened is that once the report has been submitted, people submitted comments to the panel. And now Treasury requested comments from the people to say, yes, here is the report now, after you submitted your comments to the panel, but we want your comments. So there needs to be a clarification as to that, because now Treasury received their comments from the individual taxpayers and stakeholders. So now this is the issue. We are responding to the comments raised by individual taxpayers as well as the stakeholders. So, because I think there was a view that when the report was submitted, everything is finalized, Treasury does not need. So, no, if the report is submitted to the minister, Treasury needs to request comments based on Treasury basis on the report, and we have to respond to you on the comments. So I think this is now the process.
Well, the Chair should have heard that day, because, you know, people were confusing where the comments should go, how they should be responded to, and misconstruing the fact that when the discussion is here, it will also be dealt with. They want that immediate response, so it was quite a cumbersome process that the Chair really throws me in, and we had to manage it. I'm still even not sure that on that one we're all happy. Because I know not everybody is going to be happy, Chair. And it's also, my observation is the issues of authority and so on. There come a point where people doesn't understand that a line needs to be drawn on procedural matters. I think it's an issue that will be set us for a very long time, in time in memory. I mean, I'm going to make an example. You see, if there are economists who are sitting in a university and making research work, they want to see their research work being considered by government. And as and when government does not do that, they stay unhappy forever until they see some line of the comment featuring in a document. Then they feel, okay, so this is basically that situation that's when I sing that song that I always sing to you, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. So, but sometimes the peace never come, and then I don't sing anymore, and I will always keep on trying, as long as we can get an individual funder to fund these extraordinary meetings that must take place all the time to engage. So I don't know, maybe it will come, but it's also the language we use that sometimes softens people's hearts. If the language sounds softer, Chair, then it works. But when it says it's our decision to make, then the trouble starts. That's my observation in that context. So we had to temper from our side, and then things started to work very well. And then Momo gives us more trouble than everybody else. So then we had to ask him to leave the meeting, and then things were very beautiful after that.
How beautiful it is right now.
So let's say to allay your fears, we were in tandem with how it works. I don't know, is there anything that you maybe wanted to look at that you should?
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to talk about, we've spoken about the process and just what's sort of expected from today. So, we've got a lot of comments on this report. So we've got 316 lengthy written comments that we've been through, and we've got over 30,000 responses in the form of petitions. So about 10,000 of those were a standard petition response, but then about 19,000 of them were a response where there were two or three sentences that each individual had written separately. So it has taken the team, Umpo and Anisa, and other colleagues a long time to go through all of these. I think they're tired, Chair. The comments themselves are, we wanted to elicit responses on the panel's report to say, does the public agree with the panel's recommendations? Were there other things that the panel should have looked at? Are there anything that they're missing that they didn't put into their report? So that was what we were trying to do. A lot of the questions and the comments that we're going to go through today are very difficult for us to provide a not accepted or accepted to. So in other response documents that we have on the TLAB and on tax issues, very often, for example, on doubtful debts, on collective investment schemes, on venture capital companies, we can come to a conclusion and discussion with taxpayers and then have a concrete proposal that we can accept or not accept to put forward in a format such as today. It's not very easy to do that with this response document. A lot of the questions are asking directly for additional zero rating. So if there is a question that says chicken should be zero rated, we can't in this context say accepted or not accepted. A lot of the answers to our questions or the comments are in this format. They're just put down as noted, and we put down some of our views. We are busy, if I just go to the next one, we are busy discussing what to do on the zero rating through discussions with the Minister's Committee on the Budget that feeds through into the MTBPS, and then if those decisions will then need to flow through to then be endorsed or not by Parliament.
The Committee of Ministers only met yesterday, so for those stakeholders who might think maybe their views were not taken into consideration, they only considered that yesterday, because that's the only time they met and discussing MTBPS. So I think we should understand why Chris is saying in this response document it will be noted the issues that were raised in the meeting. You may continue.
Yes, thank you, Chair. There was one other meeting, I think about 2 weeks ago, which we also discussed some issues, and then we followed up and had a much longer discussion yesterday. So the point of this is really to show that we've seen your comments, that we can try and recognize those comments, and that we have actually discussed them and we have thought about them within the executive. So we do provide a response. If we go to the next slide, just to give an overall view of what everybody had said, a lot of comments did welcome all the recommended items from for zero rating from the panel's report. A lot of the comments said that there should be increases in expenditure programs, and it welcomed that the report said that there should be a greater focus on expenditure programs, but that those recommendations are insufficient. More could be done there. There were quite a few comments to say that the current list of zero-rated items should have been reviewed. There was a feeling from the comments that the report did not go into enough depth on the current list of zero-rated items. And then there were also a lot of comments going back to the rationale for the VAT increase in the first place, and said that the rather revenue should have been raised through other measures, such as a luxury VAT, expansion of ad valorem, or income taxes, or corporate income taxes. So that gives you the main thrust of what the comments are. Can I hand over Umpo and Anita? Are you happy to go through some of the comments? If there are comments, you can just pass them back to me on online.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Just to start with the issue about the current list, besides sort of like the general comment around that the current list should have been renewed, there were sort of specific comments about specific items that should have been looked into. Others felt that basically the current list in the overall is well targeted as per the report of the panel, that the items that maybe might not necessarily target the poor should still be maintained in the current list for other reasons. Now we note that those comments, and just to say that the policy intention of having the current zero rated list was to assist the poor, and if then there is evidence around items that don't necessarily assist the poor, those should be reviewed. That I think that's from our side, the position that we have taken.
Before you continue, remember one of the questions was that is the current list as it is going to be kept that way? And there was no clear answer as to whether the list as it stands is going to be kept and add on. So you need to also touch on that so that you clarify.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, so that was, and what the comments point to is that there are a lot of items, especially sub-items in the list, that just don't seem fit for purpose in zero rating. So cherries, lychees, dragon fruit, those items are not well highly consumed by poorer households, but all fruit is contained as zero rated, so all fruit is zero rated. So that is a discussion that we are having. The point we've noted on that slide is that now what about the secondary objectives of health promotion? So we've just introduced a health promotion levy where we're taxing sugary beverages more. You know, would we be, you know, what message is government sending out if you now get rid of the zero rating on some of the fruit that is healthy? Also, we would need to chat with SARS on how to deal with administration. If some fruits are now zero rated and some not, there does need to be an administrative capacity amongst SARS. And those are the discussions we're having. The discussions in the Minister's Committee on the Budget are, should we go down that road, or and what sort of changes we should make. So it is being thought about.
All right. Thank you, Chair. If you look at the slide 6, basically is that issue to say there needs to be disaggregation of the broad categories that are there to deal with specifically with the product that Chris was talking about. And we acknowledge, we agree that needs to be done, and I think decision needs to be made about that disaggregation. You will see later some of the proposals that we got around that specific issue about disaggregation, what we can do around that. And on slide 7, it is just to take that further to just say any proposal for expanding of zero rating should be accompanied by refining of the current zero rating to better target the poor. And then again, the issue there is about that we have this exotic fruit and vegetable, And then also, again, you have the issue about the process and package, the way this broad categories are packaged, again, that also needs to be looked at because, for example, if you have other frozen vegetables and all of that, the question is, if it then is kept at zero rated, is it really benefiting the poor? We note that, and then said that basically we need to refine that list.
Incidentally, this morning I was listening to radio and I was made to believe that frozen veggies and fruit are also healthy. So you see, you scientists are making it very difficult for us to legislate. Just this morning, I was
healthy.
Yeah, frozen. This morning, now I was like, we're told it's not, and then the others are saying it is, and then we must legislate. Why are you doing this to us? You never tell us the truth about what is right and wrong. It depends on whose perspective and whose argument is much more stronger than who. Because now we have been told that white bread is going to be fortified.
Yeah.
Then that's another argument. So, Chair, these people are playing with us, you know, to be honest. Because now white bread is going to be fortified, and once it's fortified, it needs to be zero rated. And then others say something else about it. And that's the chewing and throwing that scientists actually do. At one point we were told that protein like meat is not healthy, and then came the other guy and then he proved that hunters were hunting and eating meat, and then they were healthy and so on, and I don't know these things, and that's what you do to us all the time.
Thanks, Jay. I mean, the one thing we're trying to grasp is this point between the health and the targeting of the poorer households. So if you look at the packaging point is quite an interesting one, which was raised, was if you've got vegetables, but they've been cleaned, diced, packaged very nicely, put into a particular format, it's unlikely that a lot of poorer households are paying a lot more money for this prepackaged vegetable. So if you stop zero rating that type of packaged vegetable, then it's targeting the zero rating more to lower households. But it might be healthy, so now, and that's what we're trying to discuss and see what our view should be on that.
Okay, thank
you. It will be at whose best interest are we trying to legislate? Maybe that should be the argument more than anything else. I don't know, Chair. I'm not co-opting ourselves into this discussion, but maybe the time has come where we should look at whose best interest are we taking the decision. And if and how many are those people affected, and where do you locate them?
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps it's that.
No, I agree with it, Honourable Chair. But also another useful way of looking at it, maybe a consideration really, is to follow grades. Food is graded. Maybe that's also one other thing that could assist, an orange that you consume here in this country, for instance, much as it is exported to the UK, is not the same. That's a different grade altogether, as opposed to the grade that you consume here. Similarly, also, how many of us consume blackberries? Exactly. So out of in this room, one. It's only you who does that. Okay, I'm just making an example. So that's a different grade altogether. And where do you get blackberries? You go to Woolies, you go to some other selective sort of spa shops and so on. Now, but generally, if you go to some of these general sort of, what do you call them, supermarkets, you wouldn't find blackberries there. So again, I'm saying maybe the question of following grades in terms of how food itself is packaged and graded could also resolve this question. Thanks very much, Honourable Chair.
Thank you for the intervention. Good.
Okay. Thank you. On slide.
Excuse me, I forgot that it was you who was speaking. I'm sorry.
All right. No, thank you, Chair. On slide 8. I mean, there was an issue that was raised about the currently zero-rated pilchards, that basically most of these pilchards are imported, and now they are currently zero-rated. I think the difficulty about all of these things is that you have zero rating that is based on assisting the poor. But then there are other issues that are raised in terms of the issue about imports. Now, that sort of like creates a problem that if you then say this should be standard rated, you are trying sort of like to address some other issue using the VAT system, which is not intended to do that. And basically, I think that's sort of like the problem that we encounter in terms of sort of like the comments that are coming in terms of trying to sort of like balance these issues, that maybe there are better instruments to deal with the issue around this large imports of pilchards, you know. Because again, if you say they must be standard rated, again, they will be standard rated, but also locally pilchards will be standard rated and all of that. Now the question is, you know, what is the impact of that on the poor? Because this was put there so that it can assist the poor. So there are this sort of like other objectives that stakeholders want to look into that doesn't fit properly into sort of like the VAT framework in terms of what it is intended to do.
Yeah, but maybe that you are raising that point, because I want the chairperson to notice it's an issue that belongs to trade and industry. It's not an issue that relates to VAT specifically.
Yeah.
It's the issue of the custom duties imposed on important products competing with locally produced issues. There will be a different dispensation in terms of the law that the Department of Trade and Industry will have to look at, that already they are even dealing with. How they're dealing with the issues of the AGOA was basically to defend infant industries against imported products. So the argument was misplaced, basically, because it's an argument that belongs to how the Department of Trade deal with import duties on imported products. And I don't find it contradictory to what we are trying to do in terms of the VAT system. So it's a separate discussion altogether. So I think we should understand it in that context.
Yeah. Thank you. And just moving on to sort of then the items that the panel recommended. Just to say that the comments that we have received, basically there's a sort of like an overwhelming a support for the six items that have been zero rated. But then there are comments also that sort of like nuances all of those recommended items to look at sort of like specific issues, either be from the health perspective of the recommended items. Now, when you look at the white bread flour and cake flour, to say that the one submission that we got from one of the medical association was that the white bread flour and cake flour, or white bread flour is currently fortified, and white bread cake flour will also be fortified. So maybe from that perspective, it will have those kind of like nutritional elements to also warrant, you know, or not to be concerned about the non-nutritious impact of zero rating white bread flour and cake flour. And we know that the regulations from the Department of Health are dealing with that. But then you get other comments that say basically government is by zero rating or agreeing to the recommendations of the panel to zero rate it, government then will be promoting the consumption of unhealthy products in a way. Because the main issue is that this white bread flour and cake flour is compared to, you know, your brown bread with flour and all of that. To say, if you look at it from the white bread and the brown bread, that brown bread is much healthier and all of that compared to white bread, and also sort of like the inputs being the white bread flour. because again, the issue is that even if you fortify, this white bread flour and cake flour, it still doesn't sort of like match up to your brown your brand brown bread. So we note the comment there, but then to say again, you look at from a health point of view, they raise all of those issues, but from the research that has been done to say if the objective is about assisting the poor, currently the poor in terms of consumption, this is what they are consuming right now and all of that, even though we have this health issues, health concern about this product. So now if you zero rate, then it means then in essence you are promoting that. Again, how then do you balance that against the health concerns that have been raised? So
just a quick one on that. I mean, the white bread flour and cake flour, in our internal analysis as well, that is the most well-targeted of all the recommended items to the poorer households.
Yeah.
It's in principle that a balance needs to be taken on, you know, I think when it comes, that will be have been taken into consideration.
Yeah. And now looking at specifically at white bread, to say white bread is unhealthy, it has minimal protein and all of that, and it has high glycemic index, and basically government should not be promoting, you know, white bread by zero rating it. So we note all of those comments. Now on the other items on sanitary products, the petition that Chris talked about in the intro, we had more than 10,000, I think, that were just sort of like under that subject of sanitary products. There's sort of an overwhelming support for zero rating of sanitary towel, but then others then raise issues about the benefit of basically like they're not, because the zero rating of sanitary towels is based on sort on gender equity issues, but then people raise issues about the benefit in terms of the poor and the high income households, to say even if you zero rate a sanitary towels, it's not going to assist the poor in terms of trying to deal with those issues. So basically then on gender equity grounds, the zero rating sort of is proposed. And I think,
this is a matter that you need to be very careful. You're going to be in trouble, and then even the women in this meeting will not like you if you can make the men. So as you apply your mind, be very careful. We don't want a march.
I think this is a very sensitive issue. I've been attending Women Caucus in Parliament on this issue, and we said all the time, even on the Women Caucus, that based on the President's speech, I think in 2011, the first thing is to supply to indigent women. That is the first thing. So if maybe we do through the expenditure item, firstly, because we are saying that zero rating is not going to assist indigent women who don't even have money to buy. So what we were proposing is that firstly, we drew it through the expenditure item to supply to girls at school, to clinics and that. And then we are in collaboration, there is a government working paper on this, how to supply to indigent women on that. That's why we're saying that it's important to supply for free to indigent women. And then you can look at the zero rated items of sanitary towels later after you've done the supply for free to indigent women. That's what we were proposing.
You see here, it's where you were not supposed to write noted. You were supposed to say free supply to indigent and school going children. This one doesn't need a noting, it needs a firm decision. You are going to put us in serious trouble if you don't have a quicker decision on this one.
Thank you, Chair.
Forget what Momo thinks about this one and so on.
Can I just say one thing? I mean, Chair, the MTBPS is in a week tomorrow, so there will the announcement in the HBPS. We also need to be careful about what we say here.
Let's hope this announcement is coming and then don't say anything again about gender equity and so on. Say this one, there's an announcement coming.
Okay, thank you. I was going to talk about the expenditure items later on, but yeah, okay, thank you. Thank you. Moving on, looking at the issue about school uniform. Okay. The panel recommended that school uniform must be zero rated, but then that will be subject to further investigation in terms of defining what school uniform is, right? So I think that sort of like requires some further work together with the Department of Basic Education to look at all of that. So basically, that's the recommendation coming from the from the panel. But then from the comments, people are raising the issue to say, basically, I mean, zero rating school uniform, even if you were to get to that, it's not going to assist. Maybe then we should look at providing school uniforms for free to poor households. That will be a more targeted approach of dealing with that. And we note that comment and to say that we'll work with the Department of Basic Education then to look at this issue of school uniform and then how best then to deal with it. We'll look at it both ways from zero rating point of view and then the expenditure side of things, just to look at that. Then there were comments about the additional items, because remember the panel only talked about the six items that they wanted zero rate, they didn't want it to be zero rated. Now from the comments, the stakeholders were saying that basically the current six items that have been recommended are not going to be sufficient in terms of providing that relief to poor households. So additional items need to be considered for zero rating. Okay, much more.
The issue of providing 120,000 per annum to...
I'm speaking on my slide. Apologies. Okay. Oh, okay.
Don't jump the controversial ones. Nobody will address them. Chris has thrown them to you, so try to speak to them. Even if we don't agree, we'll see what we do with them.
Oh, okay. Thanks, Chef. Maybe it's better to talk about this school uniform issue. A comment came to say that basically some of the schools, especially your private schools, basically then they have this specialized uniform and it's quite expensive and all of that. So if they use zero rate the school uniform, basically you don't be targeting the in this context, it won't be helping the poor because again you are looking at private schools that pay that those amounts per annum. The issue of nappies, again, there was sort of support from stakeholders about zero rating of nappies, but then others they strongly oppose the zero rating of nappies, looking at the environmental side of things of nappies. Again, to say that, especially like your disposable nappies, to say the way these disposable nappies then are sort of like disposed basically pose a threat to the environment in terms of the landfills and all of that, because the materials that are used for this disposable, they are not biodegradable. So again, looking at whether they should be zero rated based on the problems that can result on the environment as a result of it. So we note that. And then again, on the nappies, there was a comment to say, if you zero rate nappies, basically you are looking at a subsector of the population, because then you are only looking at those who are who have infants who need nappies, or in the case of maybe adult nappies, that specific sector. So in a sense, then you are just there is zero rating for those. Then it means then sort of like the general population or the poor who are not purchasing all of that, they are not going to benefit. But the exercise is to look at how do you provide relief to the poor generally. So then this one seems to be sort of like narrowly targeted to subsectors of the population. So this is saying that maybe it should not it should not be zero rated for that purpose. And then the general comment to say all of these other things, maybe then they should be done through the expenditure program than doing the through the zero rating. Now, other additional items that people wanted to be included in the list for zero rating, I'll focus on them. Because the panel, in terms of the other items that they looked at but they didn't zero rate, was the issue about baby formula. They gave reasons why they didn't recommend it, and then also the issue about not reaching consensus on the zero rating of individually quick frozen chicken. Now, focusing on those additional items that people commented on, the main issue that people commented on was on the poultry, the chicken issue. Now, there was support from a lot of people to say chicken must be zero rated because the poor, in terms of their expenditure, they spend quite a lot of their income on the purchase of chicken. And then again, on the issue that chicken provides the protein or the main meat protein that the poor consume comes from chicken. We note that comment, and I think that Chris maybe can talk to that.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I mean, this is one that's been consistent through all of these public hearings, is the push for chicken to be considered zero-rated item. I mean, this was not agreed to in the panel report, but it's still there is a consistent push for it. I mean, I think in that first comment you can see that, you know, chicken accounted for 13% of food expenditure by the lowest income group, so it's the highest expenditure. It's also a very high expenditure in higher income households. So this isn't as progressive as, for example, white bread flour or cake flour. And the other thing is that it is, because it's the most consumed, it would be hugely expensive to zero rate this. So the panel believes it was about 6 billion. We think it will be closer to 8 or 9 billion if you were to zero rate chicken. So the VAT increase, we would make 23 billion, but then we would lose 9 billion of that just by zero rating chicken alone and not any other item. So this has a very large fiscal cost, and it is something we have to be very careful about, but we do recognize that there is this push for additional protein, which we will talk about.
There was a lot of catching of feelings on the discussion on this issue and so on, and I think it's an issue that the panel will have to come back and show empirical evidence on the impact, because when people deal with numerics, we need to go even beyond just one panel, but to look at how we justify figures. Because, you know, you had people who were questioning this impact and so on. So maybe as we respond, there will be more evidence that will put in front of people in terms of collated information about this impact. Because people were not looking at whether we're going to lose money in the fiscus or not if we go this route. So maybe we should structure our arguments as and when announcements are made to clarify that part. Because this is the one that worried me in terms of how people really caught feelings and so on.
Yes, Chair. I mean, so our view, and I think we mentioned it in the meeting, was that we thought that the costings of the independent panel were slightly underestimated. We didn't think they grossed up to what the cost would be in 2019. And it is quite difficult because there are different measures of what consumption is out there. We think the Reserve Bank has probably a more appropriate measure. They were using a Stats SA CPI figure. So there's slight technical differences there. I mean, the one thing is that in both our analysis and their analysis, there is a very large cost to zero rating chicken. I mean, the poultry industry came here and said we are the most consumed item in the household, but then they said that the cost will only be 1 or 2 billion, and we just don't agree with that. So there are different figures being thrown around here. We think we are slightly above the panel's report.
Prove it, because to me it's not whose view is right, it's how justifiable the view is in terms of empirical evidence, so that we are not taken to task on the basis of what is deemed to be an assumption, but there's material evidence that can corroborate the views. Because once we do that, we will not go through a litigation process that's going to stop the entire application of the VAT on the basis of one issue, which is poultry. So how you deal with it is going to assist us taking a good decision.
Chair, just some clarity. Chris, we're talking about poultry now, but you've been hedging a bit about your calculations about the whole package. When you say it's yours, you think is higher than the panel, that's on the whole package, not poultry. No, it's on the whole package, I think.
Okay, so just to provide a bit of information in terms of how the two methods we look at, which get slightly higher estimates. The one is in the panel's report themselves. They also gross up the value to try to get to 2019. They have a Stats SA figure and they have a Reserve Bank figure that they gross up. They use the Stats SA figure, which is slightly lower. You know, we think the Reserve Bank figure is more appropriate, which is slightly higher. So that's one way, and that grosses up everybody and all the items. So, you know, the 4 billion of all the recommended items would be closer to about 6 billion the way we do it. The other way we do it is we've got income and expenditure survey data, the micro data, the same type of data that they use for the underlying, and we try and in effect simulate the whole economy to see how much VAT should be paid, and we control total it to the amount of VAT that is paid, and then we actually go into the data and make each item zero rated on a case by case basis, and then that also comes out with a higher figure, which is quite close to what the Reserve Bank figure is. So we don't look at specific items and say it's lower or higher. Overall, for all of them, it would be a proportion that is higher.
Yeah,
sure. If I understand you correctly, you're saying that the panel says it's about 4.3 billion or something, right? And you're saying the figure is 6 billion. So is that what you're saying, the overall? If we were to implement what the panel has requested, right, then they're saying it'll cost, you'll forego 4.3 billion. And you're saying it'll be 6 billion.
Yes, so I mean, our estimates are 6. I mean, we could be wrong. The panel could be right. You know, we've got to take a figure to then put into the fiscal framework and our projections. I mean, we might, because the panel are lower, we might put in a figure that's slightly lower. We would have internal discussions on it. But our internal models and the way we do things, you know, we think that number is slightly higher across the board. In the presentation that the chair gave to the committee, she said, we've spoken with them about this, and she said, yes, well, it also could be higher. It's difficult in these situations to know what is right or not. And she did mention that then, well, the impact of the VAT increase would be higher. So I think in that session, you were surprised at how low their impact of the VAT increase was on low-income consumers. And if that estimate was higher, then the impact on households is slightly higher as well.
I understand why I'm putting my energy on this issue.
One last clarity. My apologies, Madam Chair. I'm sorry, I might be missing, but the poultry was not part of the original. So poultry would be in addition to the 4.3 or 6 billion, whichever figure you'd like to use.
Yeah, so they got two tables. The one table actually included poultry, and then that figure came to 10 billion in total. So it would be the same proportional amount more with poultry included.
And the grossing up comes the gist of the matter. That I don't know, Chair, in our report whether we're going to say in terms of the grossing up, Cabinet will have to consider a different view to substantiate whatever decision that's going to be taken in terms of determining the total cost after zero rating. Because if we don't put that rider, we might find ourselves in a situation where even your forecasting of the economy in the next engagement on the economic policy is going to be questioned and becomes a major issue every time you make statistical changes to any policy position that you're taking. So I hope you catch the point of trying to make list you have been taken to task in terms of how you have dealt with it. So how you aggregate and the authenticity and the credibility of those statistics. Because I saw for the first time a festival of mine putting numerics to justify views. So it gave me quite a homework to think along those lines. And here you don't just use trust. You don't measure this through trust. You have to use other methods. So, Chair, we are not going to allow anybody to take us for a ride. Né? Here we're going to show you that we also can think at some point. So we give you that homework, and you don't have much time to do it. We know you are very smart and so on. Don't try us for this one. We're going to look at it very carefully and do comparison. Chair, if we have to consult even somewhere else, we'll do that. But we trust you, so we don't have any reason to doubt. So we heavily rely, because we know you carry a lot of credibility, and we know you don't want to risk that part. So we understand. It's what I said earlier on, is that people sometimes want to see their views considered, and how they do it and how you respond to that can be a problem. So that contestation, maybe we can also be invited and watch you when you engage, and then we make, because the subcommittee chair gave us that opportunity to go to the minute engagement and see how you tally and you. So it might as well work if we consider that. I know it will mean additional funds going to a separate meeting. I don't know. You will apply your mind on that and take it. Okay, Chair. You continue. What else are you doing? He's saying he's not in this thing. It's our problem. He's just observing us from a distance.
Yeah, now, Comrade Chair, I think he's so intimidated by you. Nati, there's only one downside to Tandi, right? She's made everybody else happy, but she's so antagonized the DA. Look, they're not even here. So I'm not as bad a chair as you think I am, Nati.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. And then the issue on the poultry again, or just looking at chicken, then we talk about zero rating of chicken, what exactly are you talking about? I mean, the comment that you got was that the whole chicken must be zero rated rather than to look at some portions of the chicken, because again, if you look at the argument is if you are looking at the protein, the protein nutrient and all of that, where is the protein in the chicken? You know, so I think it's that story to say, if you don't zero rate the whole chicken, then you'll be missing out sort of like the protein, because the protein sits elsewhere. If you just focus on maybe sort of like the head, the feet, and innards and all of that kind of stuff. So I think the argument around that. So we know that and all of that. Did you want to make
I still need to be convinced that one one animal can be good only on the head and then be bad somewhere else and so on. And it's the same thing. I don't know. I'm not a scientist. We'll come to that at one point. But it's scientists when they try to justify their views. Others will say to you, potatoes are good, others say they are bad. And then they give all sorts of things and so on. So we'll come to that. It's about superior arguments, and we're aware of that.
Okay, thank you, Chair. So can I maybe then the story of chicken, maybe leave it and then move into to other things?
Okay, no, thank you very much. That will be on slide 21. There was a comment to say that all food items should be zero rated. Basically, food is not a commodity, so it should not be subject to tax and all of that. So basically, zero rate all the food items and all of that.
That Marxist was not aware that they also dust pudding with gold dust and charge it 10,000 rand per serving, and it's still called food. You see?
Yeah. So basically, we just said that basically, I mean, by doing. So the issue there is to basically to say if we were to do that, then basically we just erode the tax base and all of that. So one cannot basically look at that. And then there was a recommendation on the peanut butter to be zero rated, because again they were looking at the issue about the energy energy density of it, and then being a source of protein, and that is consumed by the poor. But then again, this issue was included in terms of basically the argument was on zero rating, but then to say that this peanut butter is part of the feeding program. So I think then kind of like creates a problem, because then if we talk about the feeding scheme program, that's kind of like on the expenditure side of things. And now the zero rating issue becomes sort of like a different discussion to have, whether a zero rating peanut butter generally will achieve that objective, but if it's part of the feeding scheme program and it's argued in that context, then it becomes an expenditure program that one can look at. Okay, I'm going to ask my colleague Anissa to just continue from slide 22.
We'll prove it when we engage. Sorry, Anissa, we're just baptizing you into the systems of this committee.
No,
it had nothing to do with you. It's
no,
the ongoings of this.
Thank you, Chair. As long as you're accepting me within this, it's great.
You're also a Zulu, so don't feel offended when you're talking about the Zulu.
Yes.
You can't say Zulu. She's a Zulu. Look at her.
See from far. Don't let me start speaking. Okay, thank you, Chair. So I'll try to go through this as quickly as possible. When you look at, just to follow on from what Npo was saying on peanut butter and on as well as on the poultry, I just want to touch on one point. One of the comments that we continuously received was on stunting of growth and protein. We've done our research on this, and yes, stunting of growth is not just protein, it's on lack of nutrition in general. Protein is one part of nutrition. And there are complexities on protein. You will see it in our slides. I won't go into details. It has to do with animal proteins being seen as whole, complete proteins, whereas plant-based proteins being seen as incomplete. And what the argument was that on incomplete proteins, they need to be combinations so that people can get the complete proteins the body needs. However, people are unaware of those combinations. The point I want to raise on that is that we currently have eggs and milk, which are zero rated, which are from animal sources and are complete proteins already. Okay, so same thing with peanut butter as well.
Thank you for coming because you enlightened us on a perspective that was not presented before.
Thank you. Okay, so just to move on to the other items and the comment received. The comment received was a zero rating cake, bread flour, sorghum. There was even mopani worms, a whole lot of issues, macheo, soup powder. Would be, you know, those are proposals that we must consider looking at zero rating all of this because it would disproportionately benefit the poor. And what we're saying is in re-looking the entire list as a whole, we note these comments and these concerns. And then, but there were also comments that said that if you look at things like baby foods and children's clothing, you can't just say all of it. If we decide on zero rating, you can't just say all of it, because there are also differences in pricing of these items. So there are various sensitivities to these things. You must also look at what are you assisting the target groups. Are you assisting woman-headed households? Are you assisting, you know, the rights of children? Are you assisting people with basic needs for food? And like Chris was saying earlier on, there's a very big balancing act to be done, because at the end of the day, you've got to look at the initial reasons for zero rating was to target merit goods. And merit goods are targeted at the poor. However, at the same time, we are saying if these are what the poor are consuming, and if we are then going to standard rate other items that were not standard rated before, take it out of the list, are we then saying to them, we don't want you to have that? And yet, are we then taking those choices away? We also have to balance it in terms of the health issues. Do we give the poor the choices? I mean, if you look at one example we looked at yesterday, in fact, at a supermarket, an apple was $4.99. A kiwi fruit was also $4.99. Are we then saying to the poor, no, you must buy an apple, whereas the kiwi fruit has all the vitamin C you need? These are the kind of balancing acts that we need to look at. Other items that were the comments received was sorghum, for example, is an indigenous crop to Africa and remains a basic staple food. And since it's used quite widely, sometimes more than maize meal, it's something that we need to look at as well. So we note that in our considerations. The other comments were
also used to make people drunk, you know.
That's the problem. What are you using it for? I'm assuming the best, that people are using it as a food. Okay, so the other additional items that people spoke about, I'll broadly group them into water, electricity, and sanitation. One comment was, consider introducing a progressive sliding scale in the VAT regime for electricity and water for all households, but in particular the poor and working class. We note that, but we do note that the comment did not take cognizant of the fact that the national standard is to currently provide 6,000 litres of water and 50 kilowatts of electricity free per household, per poor household already. In this manner, there's already a degree of progressivity in the current system. There was also a comment to consider the zero rating of all subsidized low-income targeted residential electricity tariffs, as it's administratively easy and has the potential to have a much bigger impact on the lives of the poor, and, you know, rather than household fuels, which can be dangerous and spark fires. So we do note that, those concerns. On page slide 25, national government, the comment is national government should consider zero rating sanitation, which is sewage services, at a local government level, since it's a basic human right to have access to adequate sewage and sanitation, and that, you know, everyone has a right to an environment that's not harmful to their lives. We do not take note of that as well. The other comment on water and electricity was ensuring cheaper access to soap and medicines and medical services, but limit them to those in public institutions, and that would advance the rights, again, to health, sanity, and dignity. We take a note of that. There's a comment that flows from there with on medicines, comment that says, we must consider zero rating basic medicines. If the poor cannot afford basic medicines, they will skip clinic visits, leading to more health complications and placing a further burden on the state. That was a comment. Now, we note that, but we do note that medication provided at clinics is free. So it's not. We don't see how it's going to lead to the poor skipping their clinic visits. The other comment is also something that requires a balancing act to be looked at, is airtime costs. As much as some might see that as a luxury, others might see that as something that people use to get jobs, because you're using your cell phone, you're trying to access the job market, so that is something that needs to be considered with sensitivity as well. And, you know, obviously balancing these needs. Again, another specialized group comment was on us considering zero rating assistive devices. Now, assistive devices are issues that people with disability need to live with and work with. So, for example, a blind person needs a specialized computer keyboard and a specialized printer that then prints things out in Braille. And it assists companies. What the argument was that if this is zero rated and there are some concessions here, it would assist companies to buy these cheaper and be able to employ people living with disabilities. So that we've had discussions with this group last year sometime as well, and it's something that we have noted. So in terms of other measures, the panel report recognized that, like Mpho said, the expenditure program has a very important role to play in a lot of these issues, because it's more targeted, it's something that you can actually see the benefits of. But Treasury as a whole, as the tax policy unit, for example, cannot make these sort of decisions alone as well. It's something that would involve intergovernmental committees or you know, other government departments being involved in it. I mean, if you look at things like the child support grants and the issues being raised there, the sanitary dignity, just on sanitary dignity, there is already an intergovernmental national task team on sanitary dignity that's looking into how to roll out this project. I'm actually on that task team myself. So these things have to involve a lot of other government departments that need to look into these things that we can then come up with solutions. Similar to this, and if on slide 31, also the school nutrition program, again, you need to involve Department of Basic Education, Department of Health. There are other government departments that need to have a meaningful impact if we're going to have any, just zero rating alone is not going to assist where we need it to be to assist. I'll hand over to Mpho.
You know, some of the concerns that were raised by people were genuine. For instance, and I'm going to give this anecdote. In the Free State, there was a time where medicines from the provincial government was not available because of some botched tender project and so on, and people were expected to buy their own antiretrovirus. Now, you see, the engagement that you are saying should be in such a way that those affected departments must provide guarantees that services will be available, so that people must not use taxation laws as a shortcut to address service delivery issues. Because basically the challenge was that people were saying, where there is no service, please zero rate. So they came to National Treasury with the hope that you'll address challenges that are not addressed through other departments, including transportation, where you find the situation where, in the Eastern Cape, for instance, children were not being able to go to school because there was no transport for quite some time. So those are the things that, as you engage in this other subcommittees, you must raise them and address those issues.
Yes, Chair, thank you. That's the important part of the whole thing.
Not so much important point, Chair, but I just want to emphasize and agree with you that I agree with the point that we cannot say medicine should be zero rated, because public health institutions, they give medicine free. But what you have said, the part that Department of Health must play is very important, because the system itself is a problem. The workers themselves, the doctors, I've worked there, I know, they take these medicines and people are running short of the chronic medication, and who is to take the blame? It's the ruling party or the executive. So it's very, very, very important that they play their role. And when you talk about the scholar transport, and I think it's the chairperson who made it, I appear on the hour about the scholar transport. The hour is a newspaper in Bumala, and that's wrong. The information they are giving there is wrong. He doesn't know it.
No, he must not hear it. He must not hear it. No, you must remember this is the former MEC, so they never
had an article on Ziyawa about scholar transport, and I mentioned this. So that's the short part of it.
Also, the authorities also don't like this discussion, so we need to drop it. Don't do this, he knows everything.
I hear you pretending, I see that. Thank you, Chair. Yes, that's quite correct. At the end of the day, these things are a government-wide problem. So it's not something that can be resolved by the VAT system alone. It's not something that can be resolved by a tax policy unit. It's multidisciplinary. So government as a whole needs to come together on these things. Same, like you were saying with public transport as well. You know, this is our point as well. This is our response to those comments. There was another comment on passing the benefits of the zero rating to the consumer. That's a big concern, because if you're going to zero rate an item, there's no guarantee that the manufacturer and retailer are going to pass on that benefit to the consumer. So government cannot regulate the prices of all of this. The poultry industry said they were prepared to self-regulate, which is great, but government cannot give that guarantee that these things will be passed on. The last items here are just basically on the luxury foods and luxury goods that we must consider introducing a 25% VAT rate on luxury goods. There was also a comment on extending the list of items that are currently subjected to ad valorem duties. These are items that we're looking at in terms of numbers. Is there much benefit in doing this? Because how much of this is consumed and how much of revenue are we actually going to gain out of this compared to admin cost of dealing with this, compared to admin complexities in introducing different VAT rates, whereas on ad valorem it's done at source and not the VAT system that's done at each stage of the entire transaction. So on the last slide, basically, which is, I think Chris can deal with this one, it has to do with the corporate income tax rate comments.
Thanks, Anita. I mean, there's just quite a few points here that just keep coming up again and again. I mean, on the luxury VAT rate, you know, we try and put forward the case that we've got an ad valorem excise duty, which in effect does the same thing in a much simpler way that reduces the amount of fraud. So those products have a higher tax rate. In effect, we've already got a luxury tax rate for luxury products, which we increased from 7% to 9% at the time of the budget, and we increased the cap on fancy vehicles from 25% of the duty to 30%. So we already this year, alongside the VAT increase, are taxing these luxury goods more. I mean, what should be then considered as, you know, should we look at the list of what is considered luxury, and is that appropriate? And I think that's something that we need to go back and think about. There are also just points on the corporate income tax and the personal income tax, and there were comments that we haven't dealt with these issues before. But we have. I mean, we've tried to be open about this. We've tried to say, you know, this is what we've done on personal income tax, this is why we haven't done it, this is the scenario with corporate income taxes and why we didn't change it. We've just got a little bit there, but I hope that if there are further questions on that, we're happy to discuss if needed.
Because to me, it's not even questions, it's to give, again, figures about, and this is the argument I was raising about how people juxtapose CIT to PIT, and when we were discussing yesterday, it actually gave those numerics as to what was collected through PIT and what was collected through CIT. Because there's a perception that CIT can collect more, but in evidence, it's not the case. So in this context also, you have to provide information that shows, because many people doesn't understand, who would want to eat 10 chocolates a day, really? Or let's be honest. I'm trying to reduce. So it's something else. You see, he exposed me that I eat chocolate. So it's one of those things. Of course, I'm not doing it anymore. But there are basic foodstuffs that people need to eat. There's a difference between a need and a
and a want. And people argue as if a want is a basic necessity, which is not the case. But it's how you justify your views by showing them evidence that will move us forward. Because they keep on taking us back and saying, no, but you are not looking at the overall system that can create more. And when you listen to Nick Cole, he looks cool and he looks like he knows what he's talking about. And we don't know whether to believe him or you. If he has made a very good presentation and so on, so it creates a problem. So if that evidence comes, it gives us that opportunity to say, but here is hard evidence before us, so we cannot take it any further in terms of engagement.
Good afternoon, Chair, and good afternoon, members. I just wanted to comment on the last point. We have discussion about the issue of additional revenue. We had discussion in the office, and certainly I think I noted on the 12th of September there was also discussion in the committee about the issue of additional revenue. I think for one of the things that we raised in the office, it's to say obviously the issue of revenue, it's not gonna end this year or third and so on. So there needs to be quite a broader thinking around it. And I think the colleagues from Treasury as well are quite aware of it, that you know there's gonna be there probably need to be quite a breath thinking around how additional revenue could be raised. You know, there's so much requests on so on, there's so many other demands. And I think the point, Chair, I'm trying to make is that you know, it recommend to the committee to open up the discussion to say what other measures of revenue need to be considered, or what could have been considered, or what going forward what should be considered, and what are the likelihood of additional revenue raised in other areas. And I think, like I say, we are thinking about it in the office. And I think the point I'm trying to suggest to the Chair is that, you know, that the coalition trade should come up and start engaging the committee, what are they thinking, and I think that's also what came strong from the public hearing, to say what are the potential areas and how is Treasury thinking about it. I think also Parliament, what's Parliament thinking about those aspects. That's my recommendation.
Actually, what you just said reminded me that we also have a brilliant mind from our side. Antonio is our main weapon here. We are going to give a chance to say something, and the budget office also will speak. So we are not going to only take this view and say it was that view against this. We say here is our view, and then we listen to it, we see how we go. So she's going to present also something very short. Yes. After that, it's us. And us is you. You represent us. Yeah. So thanks, Bimsan. Yes?
Thanks. I think that's noted. I mean, I don't know if the committee has seen the latest National Planning Commission report. I mean, and they say... they think, because we have done a lot of tax increases over the last 5 years, and they're worried about the impact of these tax increases on economic growth, which we've said as well. You know, their view was that the space for big changes is limited, and that if we were to try and raise revenues, we must focus on bolstering tax administration. So sorting out SARS, sorting out all the issues, trying to get that dividend from SARS that we got after 94, you could look at how tax revenue just went up and up and up in that period due to improvements in the revenue administration. So, you know, their view was that very much it should be focused on the administration and sorting everything out first. I mean, in terms of the discussions on revenue, you know, we can have high-level discussions on what we think, which we've been trying to do this year on the VAT side. I mean, again, it feels a bit strange to, I'm sure, be very difficult to talk about specific proposals that would go into the budget, you know, openly before. You know, that hasn't been the way we've done tax policy, and I know a lot of other countries don't either. But in general, about is there potential to get revenue from this or that? You know, we're open to those discussions. I mean, on the points on
hard, just note the views.
Yeah.
Because I don't think the suggestion is to. How do I say it? Is to demand that this should be the way, but to listen, to be open-minded, to engagement. Because the spirit, if it's there, it will make you consider different views that might
Because people get worried if a particular view fails and they've not been given an opportunity to browse a view that might have worked. So to them it sounds as if National Treasury is arrogant and it doesn't subject itself as a public institution to other opinions. And that's where people start to engage their intellects and so on and look at it and say, by the way, what does this one have? Only a master's and I've got a PhD. So we don't want that attitude in the country when we discuss important economic policy perspectives. We need to find a way of accommodating, taking into consideration the sensitivities of discussing the economy in a public discourse, because that's one aspect that academics does not want to acknowledge. And it's how we take them through the systems to understand it. So it's basic, I think I understand it from that angle.
And we are very happy to engage on these. We've been trying to have engagements with some of the NGOs, and we're very happy to have more engagements just on these broader issues. I mean, because some of the data that gets put forward is obviously not in the correct frame of reference. You know, so people might refer to a number.
Let's leave that part. You test it as and when it's presented amongst yourselves and amongst your peers, and you say, but this one, I can't check, I'm not sure about the credibility of the information and so on. It's where you box one another in a very close and not public embarrassment that does not assist the state to function properly. So, and on this one, I know the whole committee will agree with me, including the chair.
I think that was covering all the issues. I mean, we're open, we're happy to engage, and we can talk about these issues. I don't know if there's any other points from the Vincent. That's fine.
Else, do you want to say something?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure whether the time is right, but what I was going to do is to ask for an explanation. No, not time in terms of my timing in asking my question. Whether of the process to be followed in this, I mean, we don't have a bill, we've got a draft bill. How would it work? Let's assume that the Cabinet says we're going to zero rate as per the recommendations of the panel. How would that work? Is it part of the rates and monetary amounts bill? Is it part of regulation? How does it actually work? That's really what I'm asking.
Are you ready, Yanga?
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the process, I think currently it's not in the rate bill, as we all know, because we're waiting for the Cabinet and the MCBPS decision. And I said to the Chair, even previously, we can table the bill if the Cabinet or Parliament or Standing Committee on Finance wants to make changes in the bill, like we did on retirement 2 years ago. You make changes in terms of the Money Bills Amendment Act, and I wish Frankie Jenkins was here to attest to that, because we can continue with the process, but if Cabinet now wants to make changes after the bill has been tabled, because we are preparing to table it during MTBPS on the 24th of October, then we can make changes.
Also, I need to remind ourselves that the relationship between the executive and parliament is not an antagonistic one. That's why we give cabinet an opportunity to present first and then engage after. So that, Chair, you need to, you are in the Justice Committee, you know this parlance that you use when you explain the relationship between the executive and the legislature. Because that sometimes we forget that the intention here is to make all the three organs of the state to be able to work together in harmony. Now, you can imagine if that legislation comes here, proposed by National Treasury, and the executive holds a different view, and Parliament itself holds a totally different view, and the stakeholders also hold a different view. Where is the point of synergy in terms of how you follow a particular procedure that will make it easy for you to relate to your views? So the way it stands is still relevant, Chair. As to we give them, it comes back away. Because when it's here, it's very difficult for you to make amendments. You can make them in the form of everybody speaking here, and we still decide whether we are going to accommodate them. That's why it was correct for you to come and source as much opinions from the public and us, and then it fits into the document. Then it's a precise. Is it a precise? What's the English word when it says it's, you know, holistic? Then it's able to assist us to spend lesser time than going to and fro in terms of discussion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just to get my mind around it, so it's an amendment to the VAT Act that's required. It's not in regulation. So it actually has, that's why I was asking, it has to come here or through a bill or whatever.
It's in the VAT Act. It's Schedule 2 to the VAT Act.
You know, Congressman, you've said things that have prompted me. I haven't discussed this with the study group yesterday, right? So I'm just throwing it out. It's actually been pricked by what you said. You see, I should report to this committee in fairness, and I haven't had a chance to speak with you. But I spoke to Mom about 3 weeks ago, and I spoke to Yanga on Monday, because I know she is in charge now this week, right? That, look, there is no requirement. Advocate Jenkins is not here, but let me put it carefully. My understanding is, both through the discussion in this committee and in exchange with Advocate Jenkins, and I think with Sakele, and he can speak for himself, there is no compulsion for the executive to introduce the formal versions of the bill with the MTBPS. That is more by way of tradition and norm. Sakele, you'll speak in a moment, right? And I suggested to Momo about 3 weeks ago that I can't see how, given the program and within constituency time, that by the time of the MTBPS we will have, as we usually do, Mr. Lees, a final version of a bill. That means that we've made the amendments we want, we fight with them, finally they give some, we give some, the stakeholders give some. So the version that they bring formally with the MTBPS is a final version. Then all we do is, we don't have public hearings again, right, Sakele? We usually don't have public hearings again. And what we do instead is we adopt a bill. We go through it clause by clause. We don't go through clause by clause on an informal bill. You will recall from 2014, Tandia asked, why is it done like this? And they explained, because the Money Bills Act is so onerous in requiring changes that we like to finalize the informal bill before the MTBPS. Now, this is the most contentious bill we've had since 1994, actually, in my view, and certainly since 2014. So I suggested that there's no need, Yanga, for you guys to rush to introduce a formal version of the bill. Why don't we finalize the bill informally and you introduce it by the first week of November? Then we don't have to go through a torturous money bill process. My sense also is, Comrade Chair, and you know better, I'm speaking from my limited sense, you've got a better feel for the issues, that we're still going to have differences with the executive, right? And we're going to then go through a torturous money bill process. If I had my own way, if it was Comrade Nene, I would have got a mandate from you and found him and discussed it with him. It's not fair to go to Comrade Tito with his coming in now. I don't even know whether he knows how this process is dealt with, right? And he's got a lot of issues. But I can speak to Comrade Monley if you'll give me a permission, and I can speak to the DG. Speaking to Momo, with due respect, as much as we respect Momo. And I agree with you, Tandi. You know, Treasury doesn't help itself, if I may say so. Yes, you have to be like all treasuries, rigid and tough. Otherwise, you'll be populist and destroy the country. We agree. But you guys bend the stick too much in one direction. And Momo's great weakness, I've always told him privately, and I'm repeating it here, as great as he is, he's too dogmatic, really. And he doesn't help to negotiate. You know? And then we try to negotiate, and you say, it's not a negotiation. You never negotiate about tax. But in fact, you are negotiating. You're negotiating with us at the very least, and we listen to the stakeholders. But to come back to the point, I would still feel, comrades, colleagues, that they should not bring the bill next week. We are not ready. You're not ready, really. But, you know, we can't force you. You can bring that bill in. It's going to slow the process down. I want to deal with those issues about process, the committee side, and the deadlines we have, because Charles, by the way, Momo, I mean, I've been raising with you running the show, and I will speak with you about it, but Charles is getting a bit jittery. Because you see, they're trying to end Parliament, as you'll know more than us, as a whip, before
the usual time. And he's been told by the NCOP, powers that be, the NCOP is not going to sit into mid-December. NA finishes the last week of November, right? Mm-hmm. We're out of here within a week of that. So he's been jittery. He's been SMSing me all the time. When are you going to finish with the tax bills? The deadline I currently suggest that we think about is the 14th or 15th of November. It gives them then 3 weeks. But secondly, I come back to this. Is it a legal compulsion for them to introduce the formal version of the bill next week?
Chairperson, I'm not too sure about that. I think Advocate Jenkins will advise better. Yes.
Let me check on that. Right. It's an administrative thing. I don't want to burden you with it. I'll do that, and I'll send you an SMS, short one. An email, short one, by the secretary to say what was said.
I'm motivating against it being presented next week based on the arguments I raised on issues of material evidence that needs to be rounded up. On certain aspects I raised, the poultry issue, the others. So they still need to do some work, and I don't see them finishing it before next week, because it involves stakeholders. So, I don't know.
Chair, I'm not disagreeing, but I don't know whether it's appropriate. I've got another issue that I want some clarity on, which I don't understand, and I'm happy with that. So if I could ask that question, it's with regard to the allowable deductions for disabilities. apparently that's been changed, and that list has been changed, and I'm wondering, is it part of these bills or not?
So the legislation provides for SARS to issue a list of acceptable expenditures. We update that list on an annual or biannual basis. We're going through one of those cycles at the moment. The way it works is we would release the draft list to a number of interested organizations. They give us feedback what they would like to see in it. We try and clarify it. I think, and I stand to be corrected on this one, it is currently out for public comment. So that's where we are in that process. We've gone through the institutional comment, now we're going through the public comment process, then we finalize it. That is an administrative list that does not fit into the legislative process, no.
Okay, members, is there any issue that you want to raise after this presentation? Or is it too hot in the room? Okay, Chair. Antonio, you are our brains when these people who from National Treasury say so many things to us. Even if it's just one comment on the process itself and the issues and what you think we have done so far and whether we're good or not and so on.
I think formally I will write something to the committee, but you know the rules are we don't give advice, but yeah. Not today.
To comment, yes. Just to comment.
Yeah, no, let me write it down, Ron. And I'll comment. But the Chair knows my views because I think I've indicated to him what my views are. The Treasury, the issue of chicken, I've also got that. I'm very supportive of what they say. I don't think it's sustainable to have the chicken as generated. It will have very significant fiscal implications. So, you know, one of those things is chicken. I don't support it to be generated. But the flour and the bread, I certainly I'm with them. It can be included in the basket.
Okay, you will write it, I'll read it. And then Zakhela will speak something.
I don't have much to say really except for the issue of process. When you're dealing with indirect taxes, there's a very limited risk that people are going to engage in aggressive tax planning, and therefore issues like VAT should be introduced to the legislative process first and be consulted widely on before it is implemented. Because it is difficult if the committee rejects the VAT increase for the revenue service to refund people of this 1% increase that is already effective now. So in indirect taxes, perhaps it would make sense for the National Treasury, like it did with the sugar tax, to introduce the issue and let it be discussed, because it's a very controversial issue and it's difficult to really reverse if the committee rejects it. Thanks.
Chair, I just wanted to also make a comment about how the National Planning Commission process matters that affect us. In the past, Minister Trevor Manuel used to come and make a presentation in Parliament and in the party caucus on such matters. So it will be also very helpful for the current minister as and when his peers in the cabinet take a particular view in a particular discussion to also help us to understand those views. Because if you don't happen to see that in a television or in news, we will not know what position has been taken in terms of our work that you are doing here, because Parliament is the one that legislates at the end of the day. So if there's a view that we have taken an aggressive position on taxation, we need to be engaged. We need to be taken in confidence about the views so that we understand one another. So this is the message basically we are saying. It used to happen. I remember that huge document, the growth path that Comrade Trevor launched in Parliament, because it's a very important policy perspective, so it needs to be engaged upon all sectors. So those are the remarks. Chair, can we make some remarks?
One is, some quick ones, right? It won't be long. One is these petitions that came to you, the separate ones with a few lines each, who organized them? You know, often it's somebody mobilizes people, even prepares things, right? The DA is very good at that, on the land issue. And then, you know, who did that? Secondly, I'm not going to answer these questions now, and we've run out of time. So, you see, Comrade Chair, colleagues, what they are saying is we will respond to civil society and their concerns. We agree with them, but we will do it in a different way. Instead of zero rating, we will focus on expenditure items, programs, and so on. Now, remember, that can't be put in the law, right? So your pro poor programs, how can we be sure you're going to do all those things? Some of these things affect other departments. So while you're right to say you can't resolve all these issues through zero rating, the committee is right to ask, how are we going to ensure that you do all these things? Bearing in mind that we've been here since 1994, and our own very dear comrades who are in the trenches with us make all sorts of promises here. Sometimes they mean it, sometimes they're stringing us along. And most of the time, let's be frank, they don't do what they say they're going to do. Let's start with the sugar beverages tax. Every time I bump into COSATU's Matthew Park, he keeps telling me, Eunice, all these things related like they were promised, not being delivered. The senior officials from National Treasury are never there, I'm told. They are like junior officials who go, and the other departments have disappeared. So that is why we ask, in our report, we'll have to be very clear. And remember, some of us at least will not be in this committee next year, mercifully. And so what will happen is the incoming five-year term committee, are they going to follow up and monitor all these issues? I mean, really, that's what's worrying me about the promises you are making, right? Then I just want to ask, right, you know, I'm not saying respond now. These are things that we need to discuss in some form or other, right? That actually, I still feel you can be more targeted with fruit. Kiwi fruit and lychees and so on, you can be more targeted, right? On lux, you see, the underlying difference, it seems to me at least, I don't know whether you agree, Tandi, is that you, rightly, if I'm sitting in your chair, Yanga, I would feel the same way in Treasury, right? And if you were sitting here with Tandi and me, you'd feel the same way. What we say is partly a function of the structural position we're in. Now, you see, you are focusing on rands and cents. You are focusing on finances. You are focusing on economy. You are focusing on those things. Correct. We are politicians. We take everything to account, but we also deal with politics. Ultimately, it's politics that governs economics in any society, right? You don't need a Marxist to agree on that, right? Or the relationship between the two. What I'm saying, though, is you are right to argue the things you do, but we're also right to argue the things we do. You see, for example, luxury goods. You will give us this argument that, hey, how much of money does it raise? It's an administrative burden. We're doing this ad valorem. But you know what I think? The politician, meaning the minister and deputy minister, and Momo putting on his political cap, which he very rarely does, sadly, would say it's symbolically important to show that we are tackling the rich primarily to the VAT, including MPs who carry these fancy handbags and briefcases and all that. And I said briefcases, meaning generally a briefcase is carried. You don't carry a briefcase usually. The woman in the parliament anyway. What I'm trying to say, unless you're a businesswoman, you carry fancy handbags and we carry briefcases. Mine is, I can even give you the price. I bought it last week, 790 rand. Right, my American tourist light bag. Now, let me put this to you. What would be the crime if we did apply a luxury goods thing? You see, there you might get a little bit of money, but you'll make the civil society, the trade union activists and so on, feel at least we're taking them seriously. So don't reduce everything to economics. Because, you see, what will happen is, if you don't get a buy-in to some extent for this VAT, the way the chair argued initially, people are going to find ways of wriggling around. Right? And my friend Yanga, which party on the eve of an election
introduces a 1% increase on VAT. It's very brave of the ANC to do it, or the ANC is very desperate, right? You can make your own calculations. But you know what? You know what? We are politicians. And we're saying to you, do your job, but also realize ultimately you're governed by a politician there at the top, and he is answerable to a political structure, parliament. So put your caps on to be more tactical. Don't just be academic and technical. I don't think you're being creative enough. What I also think, Comrade Chair, is that in our report to Parliament, this time, because the VAT issue is so sensitive, we have to have a long, Zakele, a long overview of what civil society said. In fact, this document summarized very nicely. You're very good at that sort of stuff. And you know what? It should be mostly in the report. You've got plenty of time, 2 weeks at least, 3 weeks to prepare it. He's going to do a lengthy thing. The recommendation side, Sandy and I, we will deal with that, right? It's our job. The rest of it, the summary has to be there. Then what we have to say is, you see, we can't stop here. I think people are right. I mean, thinking about it last night, I read Antonia's stuff late last night, and it pricked something in me. That, you know what? They're right, I think. And the chairperson also said this. We need to review all the items. And I think you need to leap ahead in the next 24 months and be more strategic in even within an item like fruit or vegetables, right? I think it can be done. You think it's an administrative nightmare? Davis committed. Let the next 5-year term deal with that. Then I want to also say that there are many things I feel, but I won't raise it here. I am very impressed with Zakele's point. Very impressed. You see, he's saying, I think we should really think about this in our report. Personal income tax, CIT, you can't do it earlier. VAT is an indirect tax. His point. I'm really impressed with his point, Comrade. I don't know if it came up before. I only noticed it now. I think we should seriously get an answer from you, Yanga, next time you're here. What is wrong in what Zakele says? And Zakele, can you do a bit of Googling? See how VAT increases are dealt with in other democracies. I really like what he's saying. Because it's a big issue, really. Yeah, and it can't reverse it. That's the point he's making, and that's what Tan is saying. So I really like what he's saying. Then on the issue of PBO, let me find a diplomatic way of saying this. You know, we have a tax expert here in PBO, maybe more than one. Now, the PBO says they cannot advise us. We agree. But the question the PBO needs to ask itself is, this has been the biggest issue we've confronted since the PBO office was established. Has the PBO, within its defined role, offered us the support that we are required to have? We cannot keep writing memos to them and requesting it. They know what their job is. I have very strong views, I'm being serious, very strong views that the PBO has not performed. I can't speak for the others here. PBO has not performed. We're not saying it was advise us, like Antonia says she can't, unlike Zakele, but you have not performed really on this VAT issue. We have every now and then raised with them, do something, we've done some reports, to be quite frank, it's tame, it's not helping us. We've been left bereft. Antonia, that's right, three options. That she said. Antonia and Zakele have come to our rescue, but not the PBO. So this is something we're going to discuss offline. So I want to plead with the PBO, next week when they come, can't you say something, that there are two or three options to dilute the effect of the VAT. There are some commodity items you can consider. Don't say it's your view. There are three options here or two options there. Please, can you include that in your input next week? Otherwise, you're not helping us, really. Then, I think, you know what's the issue? You guys, but do it because you're more at ease, should have a communication drive. You know the sort of stuff Alex gets irritated, right? We've discussed it. Your communication drive, meaning even once the bill is finalized, is to say, look, it's not as bad as you're making out and so on. You know, you've got resources we don't have. I mean, because I speak English and write English more fluently than most others, because I've got the advantages I do, I have to do all the press releases myself and so on, right? And sometimes I send it to Zakele to comment on and so on. He's always helpful. He'll find the right commas and so on. And then we send it out. It's a lot of work, really. You can do a communication drive. You know what we did in the Department of Justice?
we insisted, a precondition for us voting on the bill, that they must show us their drive in different languages. We asked them to do the pamphlet on one bill. Only when they did it, then we said we'll vote on the bill. So we had leverage then. We don't have leverage here, we're just going to vote on the bill. So I also want to say that comrades know what position we took yesterday. So I don't know if anybody wants to speak to where we are on the VAT thing, or do you want to do it, or you want me to do it. But we took a decision, and I think we should
do it on our behalf.
Okay. As far as I know, this is where the ANC is younger. You need to know this, right? We discussed it yesterday in our study group. So while the chair of the committee is here, I'm now acting as the whip, okay? Right. So this is what I know. We said, firstly, that we are acutely aware. Right? We're acutely aware. Let me find this document. We're acutely aware. Where's our... But basically along the lines of... As I remember it, right? We're excruciatingly aware, I would use, right? Big word, but acutely aware of the desperate need for the dire stringent constraints of the budget and the dire need for additional leverage. We agree, right? However, I've realized now it's on my WhatsApp. However, what we are saying is that we are unhappy, or we are ill at ease, or we are opposed. Okay, fine. Okay, let me read the words that we agreed to yesterday. Finance study group. You see how sophisticated we are, Mr. Lees. We have our Now he's not even appearing on mine. Comrades, man, you know, healthier. Okay, so I'll find it. Give me a moment.
Can you use those words?
All right, okay,
that
fine.
Okay.
So let me actually read it to you so that nobody says that they were misrepresented, right? I'll find it. Right, here we are. File open. Sorry. So I'm going to read this out, right? So that the chief of she thinks he's the chief of police committee. Well, I call her boss, Comrade Bass. Okay, Comrade Bass here will say to me, Eunice, you tweaked it a bit there, right? Okay, so I'm sorry to hold you up. I just thought I had it. Okay. Sorry? I'm open then. I was doing five different things at the same time. All right, so here we are on the VAT. This is the position, as I understand it, of the ANC, but people can tweak it if they want. As I know, so we're saying we're acutely aware of the severe constraints on the budget and the urgent need to raise additional revenue, younger. Two, however, we do not agree with the decision to increase VAT by 1%. Among the reasons for this, one, its negative effect on the poor and lower income earners who are stressed enough as it is. I don't know which village you come from, younger. Do those people are happy with you? They produced you as a brilliant technocrat, and look what you're doing. So remember, you also have a constituency. You have to go home during December. we're going to put Momo in your face there, everywhere. These are the people. When they attack Tandi and me, Tandi doesn't know why she's the chair. You see, I'm a typical politician. I'm going to say, no, it's not me, it's Tandi. The added pressures, secondly, caused by the constant increase in fuel prices. Thirdly, the widespread opposition to the increase from civil society, including the trade unions, in our view, including in particular our ally COSATU. Four, not enough is being done, that's our main point, younger, to reduce expenditure, stop funding of ineffective programs, and reprioritize spending. We're not convinced, right? We have our differences with the DA, right? So don't confuse us with their positions on it and their reasons for it. We actually have our own problems within a national democratic tradition about we not doing enough as executive and even parliament in ensuring that we save money. Not enough is being done to reduce corruption. The president will be impressed with this statement. Substantial revenue can be raised through effectively tackling the illicit economy, including illicit financial flows. And he feels it's unfair to make the poor and low-income strata pay for the mistakes of government and SARS. And I think we should add parliament, actually, because we didn't carry our effective oversight role. Far too many decisions are being made that alienate a wide range of strata out there. They are angry with us. They take into the streets, not just Westbury. Whatever those people see themselves as in the South African context, they are poor people also. They are desperate also. Whether it's white Afrikaners or anybody, taking to the streets and burning tires and so on, people don't, they're not innately, inherently, biologically predisposed to that. It's frustration. So we note that both the cabinet and, for what it's worth, the majority party have asked for an additional set of zero listing. We note the panel appointed by the minister has proposed additional items be zero rated. But we are realistic. Yanga, you'll be relieved to know. We recognize that the VAT increase has already come into effect on the 1st of April and cannot be immediately ceased. We therefore believe that the increase has to be reluctantly accepted from our side, provided, one, that the VAT 1% increase be reviewed within 2 years. The National Treasury needs to immediately The National Treasury needs to immediately increase the number of items zero rated, including by responding adequately to the panel that you guys appointed. As far as we are concerned in the ANC, acting as a whip now, there's the acting chair and now I'm the acting whip. The acting whip feels that we also need to do more work on our side in the next week or so about which precisely are the items on the panel that we agree on. And we also have to give you some sense, having listened to you, of where you might do this. Now, remember, it's not our job, Yanga. We don't have the expertise. Poor Antonia and Zakela, as outstanding as they are, we'll not be able to say how much of revenue will be foregone if we add these lists of 2, 3, 4. We are saying, it's your job. We say that to you. So for those and other reasons, I'm pleading, Yanga, that you report to your powers that be. Tandy and I will discuss now who reports to the raises, that is the DG and the minister. But we are pleading, don't bring the bill next week. It's far better for us to do it in 2 weeks from now. Thank you very much from my side.
Thank you very much. I don't know whether you want to respond, but the chair was very clear. The view of the ANC, Dumsan, does it relate to this or something else?
Just want to comment on something quickly. I think the chair raised the concerns that we appreciate the feedback, Chair, but I think we have written the brief for the committee with regards to that, and I think we distributed the note in May, and it has raised four issues, which I think, in summary, which the first one talks to the process, and how the parliament process undermined by implementing exactly what Zakir was saying earlier on. And the second aspect is on looking at the level of taxes, taking into account the broader macroeconomic objectives of diminishing inequality and so on. And also we emphasize the importance of looking at using some of the consumption patterns as a way of reducing the effect on the low household income on the report. But also, on the fourth aspect, we looked at different countries' experiences and also weight between the indirect and direct taxes and which ways it goes and so on. And I think we go quite substantive detail there. And we did secondly that report, Chair, and we can comment further next week, but we have actually given input, and the report was sent in May to the committee for both standing and select committee. Thank you.
Yeah, Dumsan, that was the general perspective on the VAT, but there are certain engagements that dealt with specific issues. I think the chair was relating to that, to say as the process unfolded, the engagement of the budget office is needed to look at how we can have different options based on what's being presented both by the sector and national treasury. So it's not saying you failed to look at what can be the options, but to internalize the discussions and make, I don't want to use the word proposals because that's you become very sensitive to that, but to present options, I prefer the word to present options, every stage of the engagement. So I think basically we're saying that. But being the chair, he will be stronger. So
Sorry, we can talk offline. I don't question that you did that. I'm saying since then, PBO has not been around. And even now when I asked you, do you want to say something earlier? So let's discuss that. Okay, let's agree to disagree. But I want to focus on one final thing. You see, the chairperson here, we have to be very careful here now. You think I'm mad? Now, if BlackBerries are zero rated, we will know that reason is because she likes BlackBerries, right? Secondly, she says that scientists keep changing their views, right, about what's good for a diet and what's not. Ask her if she's ever listened to any scientist rather than her taste buds. But that question we will discuss at the next meeting. Thank you very much.
Yes, yes.